Hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the darkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyond Ananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hello and welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the darkened corridors of power, and we shine the light ahead of us to where the evolution is taking us. You know, last week we did an interview with Mark Rabinowitz, and we went deep into the shadow of politics as we discussed some of the dark doings of our political past and how to find the likeliest truth in the midst of new word impropaganda that seems to be everywhere. And finally, how we can heal our past and move forward together. Well, this week we're stepping out into the light, into a future where active, informed, aware participation can actually put an end to politics as we've known it, and that's a good thing. According to this week's guest, Tom Attlee, we've been developing these tools for a true, wise democracy for a while, only we haven't noticed because hardly anyone is reporting it. I found out about it about 10 years ago. I was doing research for Spontaneous Evolution. I came across a book that really changed how I look at the collective wisdom of we the people. The book was called The Tao of Democracy, and it offered example after example of how the collective voice and view of ordinary citizens could provide more helpful and functional solutions than even the best informed experts. The author of that book, Tom Attlee, our guest today, has been an evolutionary activist, in his own words, for more than 30 years, focusing on the power of collaboration and collective intelligence. In 1996, he founded the Co-Intelligence Institute to aid in the conscious evolution of our society and our species. His focus is wise democracy and citizen deliberative councils, which he promotes in his book, The Tao of Democracy, using co-intelligence to create a world that works for all, and his latest book, Empowering Public Wisdom, A Practical Vision for Citizen-Led Politics. So welcome, Tom.
Thanks. Nice to be here, Steve.
Okay, good. Now, I want to give a little background. Last month, I attended the Unrig the System Summit in New Orleans, and two of the speakers, both from Harvard Business School, identified a force that seems to have kept our current polarized, dysfunctional, and ultimately undemocratic system in place. They called it the political industrial complex, which is a thriving economy that people are paid on either side, and sometimes they switch sides and still get paid, that keeps the current system in place regardless of which side wins. Now, as I looked at your work over the past several decades, I see a simple, if not easy, pathway to re-enfranchising we the people and making the kind of self-destructive nonsense we see today obsolete. One of the key phrases I see in your work is wise democracy. So let's begin there. What is wise democracy?
Well, it's not, first of all, it's not a method. It's not a specific approach. It's kind of a perspective. I like to frame it in terms of a Venn diagram. It's one of these overlapping circles models where one of the circles is power, one of the circles is participation, and the other circle is wisdom. And a lot of the most of the commentary on politics has traditionally been about power, who has power, how it's gotten and changed and distributed and all that. And more recently, there's been more and more conversation about the participation dimension, who participates and why and how, and trying to get more people to participate and to empower that participation. And I'm trying to add a third thing, largely motivated by our, what I would call extinction level issues, the crises that we face that are emerging and getting bigger and bigger, is our, what we come up with actually wise? Whatever decision-making process we're using, are we actually getting decisions that will support, you know, life into the future generations? So for me, wise democracy exists to the extent any activity or community or system can engage people, you know, many people, participation of many different perspectives in generating collective wisdom, which is empowered to actually have an impact on things. And so it's like what I've been studying is the dynamics and design factors that go into making that kind of system and that kind of activity possible. And so those design factors can be used to look at any activity or system and decide how wise a democratic system is it and what might be done to make it more so. So that's been the focus of my work, is both at the theoretical level and at the actual practical action. What methods, what theories, what approaches can help us make things more powerfully wise, more wisely powerful, more participatorily powerful, you know, all those three elements combined in different ways. And I study different approaches and different examples that have been used, none of which is perfect. It's not like we have a wise democracy I can point to, but I can point to many different innovations, initiatives, examples where different parts of that have been really well represented, and it's a matter of just pulling them all together.
Let's begin with the word wisdom. Why don't we start by defining, what do you mean by wisdom? A lot of people have ideas of what that means. Political wisdom, what does that look like?
My working definition is that wisdom is taking into account what needs to be taken into account for long-term broad benefit. Now, there's nothing very specific in that, and it's not something that, oh, well, that means we can do X, Y, and Z, we're going to get a Y solution. Basically, you can't tell if something was wise until a little ways down the road to see what is the actual outcome of it, and actually a long time down the road, because it's by definition long-term and broad, and you need to be able to see that from a distance. But what I say is there's clearly things that are not going to do that. If you are biased, if you are consciously excluding or unconsciously excluding certain voices, certain kinds of information from your decision making, that's clearly not going to serve the purpose. If you are going to be short term in your thinking and only solve a problem for now in the next election cycle, that's clearly not going to serve the purpose. So one of the first rules is, don't do the things that are they're obviously going to make you stupid, foolish. And the next thing is, here are a bunch of things such as thinking systemically, such as including as many voices as you can. Those sorts of things will help you come to wiser decisions, increase your probability that your decision will be wise. And then you make your decision and you run with it, you see what happens, and know that you're going to miss things. It is part of wisdom to know that whatever you come up with is tentative. It's like, this is the best we can do at this time. Now let's see what happens. Reality is really good at teaching us. Reality will tell us.
Reality
is a teacher. It will tell us what we missed if we pay attention to it. So part of wisdom is doing it over again, doing your effort to generate wisdom again, informed by what you've learned. So there are many different ways to apply these basic understandings, but if you go through that cycle and you establish your systems and your activities in ways that try and do the best you can with those things, you know, doing the things that make sense, not doing the things that don't make sense, and then learning from whatever happens. If you do that over and over again, the chances of you coming up with wise solutions are greatly enhanced. So I provide insight in my websites and books about what to do in order to do that.
You know, it's interesting at this point that we have a system that seems to be doing the exact opposite of all of those, that is not thinking long term, that is not based on system thinking. We have reality checks bouncing like crazy right now, and so there's a need for this. And I have to say, when I read the Tao of Democracy, and I saw so many examples of what happens when citizens are allowed to be put into a group and in a certain regard given certain tools to communicate, the kinds of solutions that they come up with, and you know, that to me is a fruitful avenue. I'm just curious as to tell me a little bit more about how some of those things have worked and how wisdom has been extracted from ordinary people in certain kinds of settings.
Well, there's a variety of guiding principles a lot of these things go by. One of the really interesting, powerful ones is random selection. Most people don't know that in Greece, the ancient Athens that supposedly was our, you know, the founding of our democratic systems, that it was run not primarily by electing people, but by assigning people like in a jury. But the whole 90% of the government offices were assigned by random selection. You're like, what the hell is that about? Nobody thought of that. But they thought random selection generated a democracy and that elections served the elites, which is a formula that we've never been told, but it's written, you know, Aristotle wrote about it. So that's one key thing. If you have a corrupt system, which ours is incredibly corrupt, different places are strategically using random selection, like if juries is one of the last places that exists in our society, but there's many experiments that are being done now in it. In Oregon, where I live, there's a new institution that came about largely through the work that I've done, and other people picked it up and carried it into law, which is called a citizen initiative review. It was observed that the initiative process, which is one of the few sort of direct democracy things we have, was being corrupted by special interests who would create initiatives that would distract people or hide certain, you know, bombs and candy boxes kind of
law
in the initiative.
Candy box. Yes, we like that one.
In the initiative process, and so they created randomly select a bunch of about two dozen people, citizens, half women, half men, and they're randomly selected, so they cover kind of the spectrum of political and economic and et cetera, different demographics. And you bring them together for 4 or 5 days and have them listen to people who are for the initiative, people who are against the initiative, you know, various experts in various dimensions of the initiative, talk amongst themselves and come up with a neutral citizen voice about this initiative. Usually it's, here are the facts of this matter that we all agree on. Here are the good arguments for it. Here are good arguments against it. Here's what we think about it. And that gets printed in the voter's pamphlet so that instead of all the crazy arguments for and against that you see in a voter's pamphlet in a state that has initiatives that are basically incomprehensible and mostly stupid in an effort to manipulate you, you have a statement of your fellow citizens who spent almost a week looking at this in detail, and here's what they recommend. It's a very, in many ways, a very weak form of wise democracy, but it's one that uses random selection to get around the kind of manipulation that happens in the electoral process
initiative. You know, process. It seems like a simple and helpful thing that could be adopted because, first of all, as you say, so much of political language, you know, are designed by people to manipulate other people. And then if you get this random group, and I like the random idea because you can't run for a random office. There's no campaigning for it. There's no
right.
special interest. It's just you're selected. And so those people who are selected They simply get to reflect using their common sense, which apparently is all too uncommon these days. So I think that even though it seems like a more obscure or peripheral example of citizen participation and random selection, it could work anywhere. In California, we have the same kinds of initiatives that are really designed to obscure the issue rather than and then clarify it. So that's one example. Are there any other examples recently of how this random selection of citizens can actually help develop policy?
There's actually a very sophisticated version of it in Austria. One of the most advanced forms that I know of this kind of thing is in a state called Vorarlberg in, I think, Western Australia, not Australia, Austria. And they have an office of future-related issues in their state government.
Future-related issues. Imagine that. What an idea.
Office of future-related issues. And they have, for about 10 years now, they've done all sorts of citizen participation things, but among them is this process in the United States that's called the Wisdom Council. They call it a Civic Council. And there's a randomly selected group of people who are brought together to talk about an issue. And the one that was most celebrated several years ago, and there's lots of English material to study it. I don't know the German, so I can't follow some of the other stuff, but there's lots of material in English on this one. It's about immigration, which is, as you know, in Europe and here is a big, big issue. And they had a randomly selected group of people, and when they did their random selection, they discovered there were no immigrants in the list. So they did a random selection to get at least one immigrant on the list to give the immigrant's viewpoint, which, again, a key principle is having, some people say having the whole system in the room. It's like having diverse voices, diverse perspectives. If you want to cover the ground, if you're trying to be wise and take into account what needs to be taken into account, you want different perspectives by definition. You're not trying to exclude voices. You're trying to figure out how to best include voices. So this is an example of doing this final correction after doing a random selection to include the voices. And then they use the process.
Okay, we're
going
to have to take a break. We're going to have to take a break, Tom. I'm hearing the music. So we'll get back and talk more about random selection and wisdom count when we return.
Okay, Bob.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Imagine, it is the year 2039. A single corporation controls most of the world through genetic modification, food, and drugs. A senior geneticist's lover dies, launching him on a quest to take down the psychopathic CEO and the handful of elite families that control the corporation. The feature film Corporate Prey, based on the novel of the same name, points us toward a dystopian future where we seem to be headed. Huge corporations do largely control our farms and our pharma, and wealthy elites seem to be operating to the detriment of most humans. Can we reverse course? Can prophecy lead to prevention? Can a movie awaken enough of us in time To find out more and how you can help bring this enlightening film to light, go to corporatepray.com. Corporate Pray. That's P-R-E-Y.
In the wake of a disaster, what one thing can you send that will help people the most? A blanket, a tent, a sandbag, a doctor. Actually, if you send a monetary donation, you send all these things. Even a small donation can make a big impact and can quickly become exactly what people affected by disaster need most.
In the wake of a hurricane, your monetary donation can make a huge difference to those in need. To donate, visit supporthurricanerelief.org. That's supporthurricanerelief.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Steve Behrman, WikiPolitiki. We're talking with Tom Attlee about wise democracy, and we just heard about a project in Austria, the Office of Future Future-related Issues, where they actually got together ordinary citizens selected randomly to talk about and come up with policy related to immigration. Now, here we are in this country with a another new word, situation, around immigration. We have a dictator-like character who decided that he's going to build a wall, and that's how we're going to deal with immigration. How much more practical and wise and functional it would be to look at the entire issue and have ordinary citizens talk about this. So so how did this thing work out in Austria? And then let's talk about what we can do in this country. How did it work out, Tom?
Well, first of all, I want to say that there's a process they use, a conversational process called dynamic facilitation, which is the most powerful process I know for using conflict in a transformational way to create breakthroughs. And there's more on my website about it and other places, and I'm happy to talk about it also, the dynamics of how it works if we have time. But they used that in the couple of days that this civic council was being run. And when they came up with their findings, there was a big community meeting at which politicians and stakeholders and media and anybody who wanted to come show up in this meeting, and they give their report out to the meeting, and then they mix in the politicians and the special interests and whatever into the ordinary people in a bunch of small group conversations where people talk together about what they've heard and move to other tables and talk together. It's called the World Cafe process. And they did a bunch of that. And then the results of all that are sent to a group of stakeholders, like governments. In this case, it was the government offices that were in charge of handling immigration, and a couple of nonprofits, and the Catholic Church had an immigration service thing that they were doing. And these findings and recommendations are turned over to this group with the mandate to put them into practice to the extent that they can and report back. So the government is sponsoring having a group of people who have the power and are already involved in dealing with this issue, who have never worked together before. They're being brought together to implement what the citizens have said they want. And there were two report outs from that group in terms of what they did. And what one of the dynamics that happened that's really interesting is there were a bunch of politicians that wanted to provide more support for immigrants, but the political environment prevented them from doing so. It was too politically risky for them to come out. The fact that this council advocated that kind of approach gave them permission to step out, and it's like if the people will lead, the leaders will follow. The leaders suddenly went, oh, here's some backup from the people. I can come out and start pushing this myself, which I thought was absolutely fascinating. But they've done dozens of these things, and they actually have instituted in their state constitution that if 1,000 people get together and say, we want a civic council convened on subject X, they will convene a civic council on subject X. It's gotten that institutionalized. So that's just one example. It's one of the most advanced examples I know of in the world of actually using it and having government go along with it.
So they've really institutionalized this idea of citizen councils. There's an idea that you mentioned. I want to pick up on it now before I forget. because there is so much conflict, there is so much polarization. How do you use conflict to generate a positive outcome?
Well, there's a variety of approaches, which is great examples floating around of. One of the first is to start with stories. Start with people's stories, the people who are in conflict. How did they get that way? There was a group called the Public Conversation Project in Boston that brought pro-life and pro-choice activists together, a dozen of each of them, and they had a process that went over years. But one of the first things they did was sit people down and tell their stories of, you know, we're all really committed to this issue on one side or another. How did we get involved? So the people didn't know who was who before they started that. So they find out who's the pro-lifer and who's the pro-choicer in the context of the story that led them to become that. So right away, you're at a human level, start at a human level instead of an idea level. And then they did another brilliant move that I have only seen a few other places do, which is they say, this is all confidential. Because they came out after several years of doing this, they came out big report in the Boston Globe on newspaper, but at that time it was totally confidential. And they said, so there's people, we have all sorts of different perspectives on this issue, but in order to be effective, politically effective, we have to join together under a program or platform or perspective of some kind. We have to have a position that we all push. We may have mixed feelings about that position as being too extreme or not extreme enough or whatever, but we come together in order to have an impact. So in this circle, let's go around. And like, if you're a pro-lifer, it's like, what about the pro-life position are you not fully comfortable with? I mean, what's the gray area for you? Same for you if you're a pro-choicer. You know, what are the gray areas? We can talk about that here because nobody's going to attack us for being a halfway pro-life or halfway pro-choicer. So they go around, and it turns out there's a whole spectrum of perspectives. It's not black or white. But the political system, because of its majoritarian frame, where if you get 51%, you win it all, the system is designed for polarization. If there's three options or three perspectives or three candidates, suddenly you don't have, you're at risk of not being able to win. So the system, as a majoritarian system, channels people towards polarized ways of thinking and organizing and speaking out. And then there's other forces which magnify that, but that's a basic fundamental design. So one of the other things is see what you can do to negate that polarizing element. Random selection is one of the things, one of the ways to do it. If you were to pick an equal number of Democrats and Republicans, and they were to be told you're being picked because you're a Democrat and you're being picked because you're a Republican, they will feel they have to be that voice instead of their own human voice. So showing up.
So really the way this works is that people show up as individuals, not representatives. And so it was kind of anomalous in the Austria example where there's no immigrants on this group. We have to find an immigrant. So that was kind of an anomalous thing. But other than that, these citizens are all chosen at random.
But that effect in dynamic facilitation is essentially canceled out, because what's happening for the early parts of a dynamically facilitated session is, as one of my favorite practitioners of it says, I'm the designated listener. You know, everybody comes in with their perspective, they're drunk on their perspective, they can't drive this thing, I have to drive. So her job as a designated listener is one after another to make sure each person in the group feels fully heard. And that's a matter of a kind of reflection, a kind of, you know, person says something and the facilitator goes, they're not talking with other people, they're just talking to the facilitator. And the facilitator is saying, well, let me see if I got that. You're saying blah, 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 blah. Is that it? And the person goes, no, it's more like this. Okay, let me try again. Their goal is not just to listen. Their goal is to make sure that person feels fully heard. And when the person feels fully heard, which is really rare in our society, hardly anybody's experienced it, there's a relaxation. You don't have to push. You don't have to withdraw. You go, somebody finally bothered to get what I was trying to say, and suddenly they're able to hear other people. And as more and more people in the group go through this experience, more and more people are hearing what's being said because the facilitator is doing such a good job of bringing it out. And they begin to see, oh, well, there's actually that dimension of the problem too, and that dimension. I haven't really adequately taken that into account. And so more and more of the what we call the mess, the real complexity of the problem, is being painted in front of the group, and everybody in the group is becoming more and more open to looking at it and being perplexed because their initial, you know, oversimplification of the problem and its solution is now being messed with. So they're having to figure out, how do I make sense, common sense, to use your phrase, how do I make sense of this? How do we make sense of this mess? Well, somebody will then say, oh, wait a minute, what if we, blah, 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 and that kind of language indicates that there's a shift in the group, that there's a shift to a co-creative energy, and somebody suggests some way to kind of pull it all together, and somebody else will go, well, no, that's a stupid idea, and suddenly the facilitator is there, what's your concern, give it to me. They translate the objection into a concern, which is a valid thing for us to understand what it is, so we can address it. So what's your concern? They do the reflective thing with that person, so they feel fully heard, and the conversation proceeds, and there's more and more of that kind of, let's solve this, here's a possible way of looking at it, kind of energy coming out of the group, instead of, no, that's a stupid idea, this is what makes sense. And more that builds up, then there's suddenly somebody goes, well, wait a minute, we're looking at this all wrong. What if we look at it this way? And everybody feels a sort of a silence and an energetic shift, if you will. Oh, right. You know, it's like a collective realization emerges, and that's the breakthrough. And that happens so often with dynamic facilitation. And there's, you're not arguing ideas. You are being helped to move into a space together, which the person who started this process calls choice creating, where you are together trying to solve the thing, even if you came in as bitter enemies. So it's a different dynamic that supports the dissolution of the polarized energies into a let's use the fact that we look at this thing differently as a resource to cover the whole ground and come up with something that works. And that's real common.
You know, I went to, I actually participated in one of these, a wisdom council led by Jim Ruff some years ago. And what I was so impressed by was that every communication, whether it was an objection, concern, question, addition, idea, everything made its way up to the whiteboard. Everything was posted on a piece of paper. So no communication was ignored. Every communication was included. And so just as you were talking about bringing out that designated listener aspect of it. And it made so much sense because all of a sudden you had people who are individually empowered to boldly speak their truth. And then what happened, as you just described, there'd be much more of a chance of a breakthrough coming from this out of the positions, after all the positions have been laid out. So this is a hugely practical way, and I just wonder how many people have actually participated in these and have have experienced the benefits of it. There's one question I had. You know, when we first back in I don't know, maybe 12, 15 years ago, one of the programs that I just heard about that you had participated in, and you know, correct me if I'm getting any part of this wrong, that it was a way of showing, by the way people stood up in a room, how polarized people were about certain issues. And you said earlier that if you live in a completely binary system where it's this or that, you're with us or against us, it's black or white, then people would have to make a choice. But if you line people up and you have them along a line showing how far apart people were. I think you had people actually move closer or further away from each other so that people could see exactly how strongly these beliefs were held.
there is an exercise like that. There's another exercise which is great for complexifying polarization, which is you have, okay, how many people think abortion is wrong and how many think abortion is necessary? And people get to different sides of the room and say, okay, how many people were raised by a single mother or a single father? You know, shifts around a whole different set of people. You know, how many people have ever had a parent die? Blah, 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 blah. How many people think we should pay more attention to climate change? Blah, blah, blah. And people moving back and forth and across the whole idea of an ideology that has a list of things you believe on all of them totally falls apart with that. People are so different in complex ways. So there's lots of interesting exercises. They're not used in the creation of policy kind of work that we're talking about, but they're really good to give people examples out of felt sense that we're being tricked into this binary liberal conservative kind of, we buy into, and I was raised conservative. I was raised by a socialist economist father and, you know, a social worker mother, worked for Planned Parenthood. You know, I am very progressive in my bones, but I had an event. I was involved with really top right-wing people who, when I read their bios online, I go, oh my God, who am I getting involved with? And it was a transpartisan conversation where one of the first things we did was in little circles of eight people, there were three dozen of us there, little circles of eight people, with each person take a turn saying, what did America mean to you when you were 12 years old? It's like, whoa, what an interesting thing to start a conversation with. Again, it's a story. The story thing. And when I started talking with these people informally, some of the ones who I was most frightened and dismissive of before I came were actually very thoughtful on a one-to-one basis. But they get out into the system, and the system shapes what they think and say in order to have power within the system. The way the system gives you power is in this polarized way. So they behave totally different in these two different contexts. And that was very instructive to me. And I realized I had potential allies in the quote-unquote conservative world that I never consulted because they were conservative. I had been divided.
Very good. We'll be back in a few minutes with Tom Attlee and talk about how we can put this wise democracy to practice right here in the here and now.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
The Shift Network. Presenting transformative programs and events to help you awaken to your full potential so that together we can build the more beautiful world our hearts know is possible. Our classes support you in finding and cultivating your gifts and in bringing those gifts to the world to create tangible change and connect us as global citizens. Go to theshiftnetwork.com or follow the link on the Wiki Politiki sponsors page.
I am Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called the Bukavu in the Congo.
We were a loving family. And then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day.
People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle you to America, and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything.
I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at EmbraceRefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Okay, we're back with a very, very rich conversation with Tom Attlee about wise democracy, common sense that is all too uncommon these days. In our last segment, we only have about 16 or 17 minutes left, and we haven't really talked with Tom about how he developed these ideas over time. I think what's most important for us right now is how do more people find out about this, and how do we begin to establish this new way of decision making and add it on to our system, or educate people enough so that it becomes a standalone system? How do we do it, Tom?
Well, in terms of movement kind of consciousness, who's the we, one of the big, there are, of course, obstacles of powers that be that don't want this kind of thing to happen. Luckily, they don't really know the extent to which it's happening already. But there's a bigger obstacle, which is the issue-focused and adversarial nature of our own activism. That's one of the things that happened to me in my own evolution. I was primarily a peace activist, anti-war activist, Vietnam draft resister, all that kind of thing. And I had an experience on the Great Peace March in 1986. We were, 1,200 people came together to march across the country for disarmament during the Reagan administration. And the organization that put us together went bankrupt 2 weeks into the march and abandoned us in the middle of the Mojave Desert. 800 people went home and 200 people didn't. But we didn't have any support anymore. We didn't have any organization behind us. We didn't have any money. We spent 2 weeks arguing with each other about what to do, and then started walking again. And this was 9 months of a totally self-organized, nobody in charge activity driven by a passion to, get across the country for nuclear disarmament, because everybody believed in that so strongly. We were wildly different. There were people on the march who supported Reagan's foreign policy. It was just a zoorama. Most people weren't activists. They just come because they didn't want the world to blow up. And in that experience, I experienced a totally different way of being. I experienced this, sort of like the Occupy movement. This was a totally self-organized scene, nobody telling anybody else what to do, and it just happening through a whole pile of different kinds of dynamics. And I had my first experiences of palpable collective intelligence in the preface or prologue to Tao of Democracy, which was your introductory book to this. I talk about a thing where we were really divided. The march was almost ready to come apart because some people wanted to march in a good sort of military line, all very well formed, so that the media gets a good impression. Other people wanted to, hang out, talk to the farmers along the way, that kind of thing. And people got to the point where if we do it your way, I'm out of here, And the march was totally coming apart. And there was an incident where we started to just hear each other. It was a very funny, I'm not going to go into details because there's so little time, but I got this sense of us as a march mind, a collective mind going, well, if I do this and blah, 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 if I do that and blah, it's like you're trying to decide whether to marry the person or not. You're going, well, it's this and this and this. It was like that, but at a collective level. And we were in the middle of a rainstorm, and when the rainstorm was over, everybody dispersed. And I realized we knew what we were going to do. Without having made a decision, without having called for consensus, without voting, we were going to march together in the cities and march separately in the country. And it just made sense because we've heard all the pieces. And it was like something just happened there that I'd never seen happen before. And that opened up this research. And at first I was trying to figure out how to help progressive groups be more effective at what they were doing. And then I realized I was trying to help a part of the whole become more powerful rather than the whole becoming more powerful. And so I began exploring how does this apply to like a whole community or a whole society. And that's where it evolved into the wise democracy stuff. It's like, what would you do in order to have this happen in a whole society? And one of the things I watched from my old activist perspective and my self-identified activist frame of mind was that the activism energy, so much energy, so much caring, so much money and time and resources and attention go into issues or go into saving this or helping those people who are being fucked over by systems. And there's hardly any energy being put into changing the systems that decide what's going to happen with all those issues. So the fact that we put our energy into the symptoms of systemic dysfunction rather than into the system structures itself, if you actually channeled all that incredible change energy into changing the systems, it would happen really fast. But hardly anybody
can do
that.
Yeah, I want to put a highlight on that.
10% of the energy is in that.
This is really, really worth highlighting and repeating, and that is that the amount of energy that we put into these polarized positions, that really, again, if any of them were actually going to work, they would have already worked. So basically, we have one unworkable theory pounding against another unworkable theory. Our energy and focus is going to that. And if we really want to solve the intractable problems that we're looking at, whether that's climate change or immigration or healthcare, or whether we have war or peace, there is this collective wisdom that wants to be expressed. I really get this. You know, there's that famous quote by Dwight Eisenhower, said, you know, that there's going to come a time when the people of the world want peace so much that the governments are going to have to give it to them. And we're rapidly approaching the time where that's either going to happen or it'll be too late. So how do we proliferate this alternative, or I like to call it alternative, because the natives will have to be altered in order to really put this forward. How do we create a wider awareness and adoption of these kinds of practices? And where, other than your wonderful state of Oregon, a higher state, is this going on? And, you know, how can people become involved in it? There's many questions there, but it's mainly my one question is, how does this energetically move forward? Clearly wants to happen.
Well, there's a funny way in which I'm primarily a researcher and visionary rather than an organizer kind of person. So this is one aspect of your question I don't know how to answer. But my life's work has been creating resources for people who are good organizers and who do have the insight that there's a dead-end quality to the kind of activism we've been doing, who move into the space of resources and ideas that I've been putting together and are freely available. The WD-PL, Y from Oxy Pattern Language, that website, WD-PL.com, that's where I dumped my life's work. I had a heart attack last year, and as they were wheeling me into the emergency room, I was going, thank God I got the Y from Oxy Pattern Language done. It's sort of, this has the ideas, the methods, the resources, the people who are doing the work, the various innovations, examples, all organized into one giant database that is a bridge between theory and action. And so what to do is to immerse in this other perspective, because there's something to know about it. If you want to organize a big demonstration in Washington, there are things to know about how to do that and how to sustain the energy afterwards. So I'm going, similarly, there's things to know about how to facilitate this move towards a live democracy in small ways and big ways. All sorts of different skills that people have can be contributed to that. All that is covered on the website, but it needs people to come and dig in. You know, this is a field of study and practice. It's not something that, if we just go out and pass out leaflets in a corner, it's going to happen. Well, no, it's a little too complicated for that. But I've done all I could to build ground that other people can work with. There's a set of design principle cards called pattern language cards that are freely available. Download them for free from the site. And the whole system is designed to evolve. There's already another dozen patterns that I've realized and some other colleagues have realized need to be added to the set for version 2, et cetera. So joining into the community of inquiry and practice that is slowly growing around this. That's the best suggestion I have given the resources I've offered. I want to highlight,
if
I if there's any time, I want to give two other examples which come from radically different directions that aren't connected to my previous work at all that I'm researching that have the same motivation of, you know, evoking and engaging the wisdom and resourcefulness of the whole on behalf of the whole, but through a different path than I thought.
Let me say one thing, and then we'll spend the next 6 minutes talking about that, which I'm excited about. What I'm going to say is that when we put this interview on the archives, we'll have a link to the site, the website that Tom just mentioned, so people can go there and look at the tremendous resources that he's put together over a 30-year period. Okay, let's go to the two examples that you want to highlight.
Okay, in January last year, I stumbled into something that's happening around the world I was not aware of from two people independently. I connected them up to each other, and we've been having conversations ever since, and there's now a small organizing body. What they described was around most public, not exactly issues, but realms. It's like the, you know, UN Sustainable Development Goals or whatever. It's like eradication of poverty, food systems, you know, peace, whatever, these giant realms. Around these realms, there are emerging multi-sector, that's multi-sector as in private, public, nonprofit, civic center, and multi-sector, multi-stakeholder, you know, different peoples often opposed to each other who have been involved in this realm, different organizations, different networks, multi-sector, multi-stakeholder, multi-scale, local all the way up to global networks coming together to collaborate. And the idea that that's happening already, and there are all different levels of development. It's like there's some where the multinational corporation is a member and it's totally manipulating inside, marginalizing everybody. So yes, that's going on there in this field of activity. And there's others, like a lot of the food system, you know, regional food system networks, where all sorts of, you know, the farmers and the consumers and the government regulators and all that are all involved, and they're actually working together really well. But so it's a whole emerging field that these groups, these networks, are emerging as a new form of governance that includes and transcends government. So government agencies are involved. Sometimes the president of the country or whatever is involved. There's government is involved in different ways, and communities are involved in different ways, et cetera. And so because this is already happening, and these people are struggling to figure out how to work together, and we have knowledge of how to work together, you know, it's like the dynamic facilitation. It's like, can we bring knowledge to these people to help them work together? Can we, across these wild differences, can we help them become aware that they are becoming a form of governance? They're defining what's happening on the ground in many ways.
Wow.
So that's, this little project is a different approach, and we want to make sure that the citizen voice is brought in, gotten up beyond the stakeholder voice. So how do you get the citizen voice integrated in this? How do you get the wisdom factors factored into this? But that's an ongoing inquiry, and there's lots of energy to work on. So that's one of my main focuses. And just it's very interesting. And just a few days ago, I learned from one of my colleagues about a thing they've been doing in Taiwan for like 5 years or something, and there's hardly any information in English, and only a couple of the most recent English information is from 2016. I'm just trying to figure it out. But after they had a big occupation of their parliament, you know, students and activists occupying parliaments, they started doing this revolutionary experiment that has continually evolved. And right now, it's kind of, as far as I can understand, there is a software that allows tens of thousands of people to be involved in offering up possible solutions to a problem and either agreeing or disagreeing with other people's solutions. There's no conversation. It's all just this thing, and out of their agreements and disagreements, the software, the artificial intelligence software, studies the patterns of communities of agreement and disagreement and identifies areas where people who normally disagree agree. And it compiles those points of existing agreement that are hidden within the conflict and passes those on to a bunch of politicians and experts who talk about them in a public forum that is available to everybody, you know, broadcast. And then the results of all that is passed on to a stakeholder group of people who are involved in the issue, and they make their comments, and that's passed on to the legislature, who is committed to take the points of consensus, integrate them into legislation, and if they can't or won't, to describe why publicly. So it's like, whoa. And this doesn't even have any deliberation in it. It's a whole different frame. And I'm going, wait a minute, how, there should be a random selection piece in here. There should be some kind of, you know, how do you get to make sure the wisdom's in there? Is this a reductionist agreement that already exists, or is there something really powerful? But I don't know. I just know that it's radically different and engages tens of thousands of people and ends up with a product at the end where the government and the president of the country have said, I want every issue to be dealt with this way. It's like, what the hell is that about?
we're talking about evolution here with Tom Attlee. We're at the end of our program, unfortunately. You'll be able to hear this on the archives, and we will actually have a link to Tom's website and work on Wise Democracy, a very rich conversation that was hard to fit into 1 hour. Thank you so much for joining us, Tom Attlee, on Wiki Politiki.
My pleasure. Thanks for giving me a chance to talk to your audience.